I'm sure glad to be here tonight. I can't get over how wonderful it was to attend the Mass this morning. And I want to thank all of you for being so kind to me, welcoming me here to your home and now my home in a very real way. It's a very special. Very good. The Catholic Press Directory in 1957 showed that there were 24 million, just shy of 24 million subscribers to all Catholic publications throughout the country. There were 559 periodicals. That was 1957. And in the following year, 1958, there were 559 publications in October of that year that became set of a contest. That was when Pope Pius XII died. How can a paper be credible and leave that out? At that time, it was the truth, and consequently, it had, you know, a natural appeal. Everybody was going to accept that then. There wasn't a real question about it. Today it's a different matter. Other than the Four Marks newspaper, what newspapers do you know that will print the set of a contest issue that will allow a writer to print something which says outright that the throne is empty? Not too many of those. And it was because of that that people asked me to write, to put out, to publish a set of a contest newspaper, a paper that would be open to that position, that would allow people to state this truth of our present time, which is not reaching anybody, which has no paper championing this cause, this truth. I liked the idea. I wanted to do it. But it's just not that simple to decide to do a newspaper. You have to have things like this planned out. That was in November 2005 that I was first approached about that. People came together, helped me along. We discussed names. There were votes. There was research, you know, into domain names, and many other things came up. By February 2006, the first paper was out. Matter of months. There was a lot done in that very short time period. It was God's will that that happened, that paper has succeeded to the extent that it has. If anything, I'm a writer. Now, that doesn't mean that I do that well. That means that if I want to say anything at all, I have to write it down. That's just the way it is. And I'm not a public speaker, and where did Father Anaya go? And I'm afraid I've never done television work either. So that's not exactly true. But radio and news service and also the newspapers. Did you know that I tell people that I have the best writers in the world? Actually, I used to say that I have the best Catholic writers in the world. But in truth, when a writer talks about the most important subject on earth, the most important subject that there is, and they write about it well, and they speak the truth on that subject, aren't they, in fact, the best writers in the world? I think so. I believe that. You know, these writers, and I'm going to read some of their names because I don't want to leave anybody out, although I'm only going to headline this. You've read their writings, many of you, and you know that what I'm saying is true, that these are the best writers. We have John Daly, Dr. Thomas Terleski, Fathers Benedict and Brendan Hughes, John Lane, Joseph Charles McKenzie, Fathers Francisco and Dominic Radecki, Father Martin Stepanich, Father Paul Trenchard, Father Kevin Valancourt. Occasional articles by others like Father Lewis Campbell, Dr. Leonard Giblin, Hutton Gibson, Paula Haig, Dr. William Von Peters, and there are a lot of others. These are champions of our times. We should cheer. These writers, they say the most important things that need to be said today. The message that goes out is one that needs to be said. It all contributes to this whole. Where do we find the church? Where do we find all of the truths of the church, the practices, the mass of the church? Where do we find that? And if we say, well, we can find the church and the Catholic press is represented partly in this magazine or in this newspaper, but they don't happen to recognize that Benedict isn't a Catholic? If they don't know that, how can we trust them for other things? Because they've lacked that. They don't have that. That's vital. And we have to have a press. We have to have a voice that brings people in, draws this community together, and helps them realize what this is all about. Helps to bring out these different things that identify us. With these writers, I am like a composer with the best orchestra. I'm very privileged to have the writers that I do. I'm stunned that I have those writers and that they write for me. But they write for you. They write for the same reason that I do what I do. God chose these writers for this task. And, of course, writers are a rather odd lot. They have a thought, they've got to put it down. Maybe they sneak out at night, scribble it on a notepad, some thought. Or maybe during Mass, they write it on a little notepad while they're, you know, listening to the bishop, or any number of things along that line. I don't use the notepad anymore. I run out to the computer and I'll jot in the middle of the night this thought or that. Writers are also pack rats. They collect stories, they collect information, and they pile it up. There's books stacked on the floor, and there's papers in every cubby hole, and there's stacks of envelopes and mail and files, of course, lots of those. Every writer I've ever known has been inclined to collect paper. And of course, if they're anything like me, they also collect lots of email and files on their internet and on their computers. Every writer has a strong sense of discovery, always learning something. Writers and readers search for truth. Truth with a big T is love of knowledge, and that love is so intense it overflows, making the lover share and express the glory of the beloved in every new understanding. What do we need a press for? A Catholic press? Again, to build our community, to draw Catholics together to pray, to love, to raise families, to work, to learn. The press is an integral part of Catholic social structure. And as Catholics, we have an obligation to evangelize. We need tools to do that. A press can provide us that. We have something in hand, something tangible that we can give to, oh, the person at the cash register, maybe a librarian that you become close to, somebody who sits next to you on the bus or on the airplane, your family member. Maybe that particular brother or sister that you haven't been able to reach, and you give them this. It's not you saying it. You hand them this. It's the best writers in the world telling them this. And they're more apt to maybe buy that. Especially if we all work towards that goal and we have these writers and the paper becomes better. Right now, the Four Marks is one of a very few publications which are set at a contest. Very, very few. And we could have 559 publications that were set at a contest, just like in 1958. There's enough of us. But with prayer, I'd hope that we can at least make the Four Marks what it needs to be to draw our families back together into the fold, to draw our families that we've all been talking about, our friends, our neighbors, the people who've left that we love. I think all of you are here because you're explorers. You have all, whether you were here for Vatican II and remember Vatican II or pre-Vatican II days, everybody has come here because they have sought out that information. All explorers. You want to please God. You need to know His path in order to do so, and you have sought and you have worked hard to do that. The Four Marks is in a very important way about community and about all of you. The feedback that I've gotten from all of you has been extremely important to how the paper was put together, what it consists of, the very name that the paper is called. And through the grace of God, I think the very best name we could have had. And I can't talk about the Four Marks as a community without pointing to the evidence that it is a community. When my husband died in June, a year ago, I received, a box full of cards and letters of condolences, prayers, masses said for my husband, said for me. And we reaped the benefits of the community that the Four Marks had built. If it wasn't for the readers of the Four Marks, that wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been the same. It was an incredible blessing that just is beyond my ability really to express. To have masses, to have those prayers, are more valuable than anything, than any fortune that anyone in this room has. That box that I have at home with all of those letters represents that incredible fortune. That's the power that the press has to convert our families. That's the power that the press has to bring people to God. That's the power that we all have when we send in information in an obituary to let other people who are part of this community pray. And who will pray more than those people who also want those prayers for their loved ones? To have the Catholic press means that we have that. Another example of that, does anybody remember the SETI list? SETI list, yeah. One person? My goodness. Yes. Yay. Just a couple. Yes. In the early 1990s, there was 12 of us in the beginning. There was an internet list. Yes, okay. That was early on, and a lot of people weren't on the internet. Things have changed very rapidly. But the SETI list developed, and it became a community. Like many lists today on the internet, the different members would jot off their thoughts, what they wanted to discuss, and they would send it to Jim McNally. May he rest in peace. And Jim would in turn send the same article, same letter, out to all of the members. As I said, that's the way it still works, pretty much. And at some point, there were some 200-plus members about the time that Jim died. Father Kevin Valancourt took over as the moderator for the list at that point. And it did, despite the fact that there's only two people here who seem to remember it, it did become something of a community. And people talk to each other, and they discuss the things that mattered to them. And to some degree, you know, with the Four Marks, I've tried to extend into other areas to broaden that sense of community with an e-letter, which goes out to those people who get the internet, who have email. Then they receive news of a more general nature, and they can comment and respond to things very quickly, you know, concerning something that might interest them. This allows them also to comment back to the list and give their opinions about things, just as we do with the Reader's Forum, which I encourage all of you to please. If you have something on your mind that you want to discuss with fellow Catholics, be it something devotional or just something that you thought had been overlooked about some saint that's special to you or any number of articles that we have in the form marks, then write a letter to the forum so that others can see what you're thinking about and what's important to you. It's about that community and presenting all of these things. I mentioned earlier that with the four marks at the beginning, there were people who knew that I had a secular newspaper, and they approached me asking me to do this set of a contest paper because they had, in fact, read an article by Christopher Farrar and wanted some way to oppose that, some way to be able to have a voice. They had seen the Northern Light paper. They knew what that was and what I did, and so they contacted me about that. Ultimately, yes, as I said, the paper went out in February 2006, and we started building the community. We all crave that. You all are here because you've met the same people here. You know who's come here. You anticipate seeing them. You want to be able to be together for that brief time to be able to talk about what you care the most about. And we need a press to be able to bring that across through other things. Can a newspaper unite us? Well, I believe so. And that's why I'm here. But there are some other factors, very practical ones. MSNBC, September 27, 2007, had a journalist with Entrepreneur Magazine predicted that a number of businesses would be out of business in the next 10 years. Newspapers were on that list. Newspapers will be out of business. There's a lot of different reasons why that would happen. Our education has changed. We're producing another generation of readers who are not analytical thinkers, don't enjoy that sort of deep reading, and there's less money for the big story on that account. An editor can't, you know, send somebody off with an expense account. Go find that story. I need to know. All of those kinds of things affect what's happening with the newspapers. And there's an internet mentality. People have all become accustomed to seeing, you know, page after page of, you know, type on any subject, because it doesn't cost anything. They can put page after page on the internet. And to a point, that's good. But there's many problems that come with that. And other than the internet, we do run the risk, in fact, of losing newspapers. The other thing which they mentioned was that used bookstores will be gone in 10 years. Of course, these are just their predictions, but I think there's something to it. I noticed also that in Billings, the only newsstand went out of business. I don't know whether you're familiar with newsstands, but they sell newspapers from around the world, around the country, other periodicals and sometimes books and things like that. gone, don't have one in Billings anymore. Some of the obstacles and considerations that make putting out a newspaper tough, besides the war to expose the counterfeit church. The baby boomers are retiring, and there's not sufficient numbers of qualified persons to replace them. That's one of the things that's causing other newspapers to go under. There's decreasing skills, so that those people who are coming up to replace them can't. They don't have those skills. It takes, well, in the case of my husband, when he died, 4 people stood in to replace him, to pick up the books, to deal with the circulation, just to help fold papers, stamp and label them. It took 4 people to do what he had been doing. With minimal resources, editors reporting on this story, they don't have the time to develop a big story, and that applies to any publication that's going right now. There's not enough money to do it. I personally know of other editors in the secular press who are certainly having this trial. There's a great deal more competition, too. 1992, when I founded the Northern Light newspaper, there were only about 3 other free newspapers, alternative newspapers, that were out there. There were more than 20 in the next 10 years that shared the space. And the businesses, restaurants, gas stations, any other place you can think of that has free newspapers, became upset with the clutter and all of these different newspapers, and it became something of a problem. So the standard papers are competing with that also, because now we have all of these different papers who have, you know, advertising dollars in their eyes, and they're doing that. So in many ways, the problems that are affecting newspapers as a whole are not quite the same as those which would affect a Catholic press, because our intents and our purposes are somewhat different. There is something that I've noticed about all of the readers that has shown up in the phone calls and letters that I receive, and that's that readers have different opinions about what they want to see. And there aren't 559 publications out there to serve everybody. They cannot narrow things down to, well, we're a Catholic publication that does verse, or we're a Catholic publication that does nonfiction, and there were those. We're a Catholic publication that deals only with saints, or we're a Catholic publication that is only Marian in nature, or we're a Catholic publication that deals strictly with our diocese, or any number of other things. The 4 marks must be very Catholic, very universal, must appeal to everyone. It must have articles that are short and light for those people who want something that's a little less heavy. They don't want to hear just canon law 24/7. They want all kinds of different articles. And I think that my writers have been very good at providing this diversity and pictures and a sense of the community and where it extends to. and try to draw people in. There's a lack of knowledge, a terrible lack of knowledge. I know you don't want to believe this, but I read the mail. There are traditional Catholics who'd have trouble answering some of these questions. Can you name the four Gospels? Why is it often called the Tridentine Mass? Who was the first pope? Who founded the church? What are the two parts of the Bible? On his forum at StRobertBellarmine.net, John Lane posted his comments with excerpts from Father Edward Lean's book, What is Education? And these are words worth repeating. I'm quoting from John Lane as he quotes Father Edward Lean. Father Edward Lean, in What is Education, Chapter 3, entitled Education and Mental Formation, begins with a survey of the results of education apparent at the time he was writing, during the Second World War. Quote, precision in the use of words has largely become a lost art. The sound intellectual habit prevalent in the Middle Ages of carefully defining one's terms and delimiting the range of their application before developing a theme or engaging an argument made for clarity of mind. The decay of this logical approach to writing and all discussion is accountable for the almost universal confusion of thought so painfully evident in these latter days, end quote. He proceeds to describe the university-educated idiot who cannot so much as define clearly the most commonplace terms, and summarizes the situation thus, quote, if a nice or discriminating sense of the exact meaning of words is a sign of a cultured man, cultured men have become rather rare, end quote. If that were true in 1944, then how much truer it is now. Men capable of even noticing important distinctions in thought or writing, let alone comprehending them correctly, are almost extinct. And this has a twofold effect, as Father Lean explains. Not only do we find it next to impossible to understand the garbage which issues forth under the thin disguise of intellectual product, but there is an even more awful result. Quote, in these days, a speaker or writer of precision labors under a serious disadvantage. He cannot communicate his thoughts since hearers or readers sees very imperfectly and very inadequately the meaning of the spoken or written word. Giving a somewhat unexpected turn to a rather slang expression, it can be said of vast numbers nowadays that, literally, they have the foggiest notion of what is offered to them in print or speech, end quote. As Father Lean shows, quote, argument is wasted on men who are incapable of grasping the force or application of the terms used, end quote. Now, the fruit of this extreme disorder was already apparent then. Quote, the most striking as the most depressing characteristic of the modern world is a widespread intellectual chaos. Speech should be the expression of thought, and thought should be the intelligible reflection of reality. But now speech even when most earnest, has become but the vocal manifestation of feeling, emotion, sentiment, prejudice, wishfulness, and the like, end quote. However, as this author shows, this mental chaos is fertile ground for charlatans to plow. Those in high places cater for this emotional illogicality either deliberately, because it serves their purposes, or indeliberately, inasmuch as they themselves are sunk in the same intellectual quagmire. In their case, it is possible that the alternatives do not exclude each other. Quote, when the politicians venture into the realm of statesmanship, or when the scientists stray into the field of philosophy, their language becomes a nebulous phraseology that is received by the multitude with awe and respect, and at times with tumultuous applause. It is listened to gladly because, being susceptible of any meaning, it can easily signify that to which the auditors incline. All strenuous and painful effort at understanding what is said may be dispensed with. Fortunately for Father Lean, end quote, I'm sorry. John Lane continues, fortunately for Father Lean, he passed to his reward before Vatican II, and especially before the intellectual chaos he so deplored was institutionalized as the Internet. Having said that, let me explain about the Internet and why I think it doesn't fulfill the need for a Catholic press. The paper I founded, the Northern Light, the secular paper, was the first newspaper in Montana to have a website online. It is still got an internet site online. So it has had the internet site longer than any other Montana newspaper. So I know a little bit about this kind of thing, having been the webmaster of that site since that time. And what do we learn from the Internet? And I'm here excluding the official sites of trusted sources like CMRI or other sources that we know represent. They're the website that represents this or that organization. So I'm not talking about that. But we can't be certain of much. I've run into a lot of different things that are mind-boggling. A couple years ago, I was sent an email. It was forwarded to me about Mars making the closest orbit to Earth ever. And that this was going to happen, this was a wonderful thing, and, you know, watch for Mars in the next, you know, whenever. Anyway, I informed the sender that the event had happened the year before. Days before I left for the conference, I received an email about McDonald's using foreign beef. The email appealed to one's sense of loyalty to country and used scare tactics to hurt McDonald's business. I noticed a subtle red flag, a grammatical mistake that I didn't think a PhD, it was signed by a doctor somebody rather, PhD, acronym. I didn't think he'd make these particular mistakes, and so I checked. In fact, it was a fraud. I wonder who would be inclined to write such a thing. Maybe Wendy's? Or, I don't know, maybe Burger King? There's a lot of things you can't find out by reading on the Internet. If you want to know whether the population of the world will fit in the state of North Carolina, with each person having 600 square feet per person, and they will. You can't just Google it. You can't ask Yahoo Answers. They're not going to tell you. Now, you might be able to type in the information and work at it and be able to find out the square feet that there are in North Carolina. You might find the population of the world and things like that with a little bit of work, but you might get the wrong answers too. You might get about, 2 million different answers for what the population of the world is. Well, one of them's got to be right. Maybe. But nevertheless, there's a good chance that you could find the components to answer the question you have in mind. But we too readily believe that we can find those answers on the internet. And it just isn't so. You have to know where to look, what you're looking for, and it's best to use trusted sources. Google gives you nonsense. I want you to think about this. Many times you have a question, and so you want to type it in, search it on the internet. I'm hoping that most of you at least have internet. Otherwise, this has been... Anyway, question. And you type this in, of course. Kathleen is Mary's mother. Is Robert Mary's mother? The first 10 of Google's replies were related to genealogy. Nowhere did I receive a reply that Robert could not be a mother to Mary or anyone. Question. Is any kind of dog also a bird? Good question, right? Answers.com replied, quote, this was interesting. This was really fascinating. Looks like your question stumped us. Contribute your question to Wiki Answers and get an answer from the community. In other words, the internet per se couldn't answer it. They also gave a list of websites dealing mostly with bird dogs. Question. What color is a blue car? Answer. Well, I could use one of the first listed replies from Ask Jeeves. Quote, ask a mechanic online. 17 mechanics are online. Ask a car question. Get an answer ASAP. End quote. Or I could look at Pink for Sale, a song about a blue car, and so on. You may need only to confirm information about a particular subject and not be able to do it. Sometimes the hits come back that aren't pertinent. You might want to know about Pius the 10th, but the other 9 Piuses show up. And so you have to do the sifting, no matter whether you put an X there or not. You'll get veterans for veterinarians. Now consider this sentence. Mary and Sue are sisters. We presume that they are each other's sisters. And not sisters of other persons. New sentence. Mary and Sue are mothers. Now, we wouldn't assume that they were each other's mothers, because we know something about biology. But computers just don't work that way. Do we make mistakes, my wonderful writers and myself? I'm afraid we make a lot of them. But hopefully I know what color a blue car is. It's a lot of work to put the paper out. Right now, the Four Marks is completely volunteer. It's writers, it's editor and publisher, and occasional staff helpers don't receive paychecks. As I said, my writers do this for the same reason I do, because they want to build unity. They want to draw people to the church. They want to provide a very needed tool, a tool we don't have at present, not to the same extent. A newsletter with a very limited circulation doesn't do quite the same thing, although there are some very excellent little newsletters out there. But there are increased costs. Everybody knows gasoline went up. That means everything else costs more. Everything that Four Marks does costs money. Everything has to be done as frugally as possible for that to work, to achieve this goal. The fathers here, they understand what it is to work endlessly to, well, in their case, I think most of them probably do the work of several priests, traveling long distances. The sisters here, same thing. Stretched thin, doing the jobs of teaching and so many other things that they're accomplishing, that they're really doing. Maybe some of you have had a mom-and-pop business. Maybe you have spent 20 hours a day struggling, working. I did that. And it's experiences like that that help me in trying to run a newspaper on this very tiny little budget. In 1988, there were fires in Yellowstone Park, and my husband and I had a restaurant on the edge of Yellowstone. And the soot came like rain. It looked like rain. It left a mess in the front. I'd come in the morning and walk and go poof, poof. The bears came down out of the woods, got into the garbage cans. My husband went to fight the fires. You could make an income doing that, but there weren't too many people coming through, and the park was closed, so tourism had dropped to about zero. And people in town, they walked around with masks on their faces, and they didn't go out if they didn't have to. So I kept the restaurant open, and I swept the floors, I dumped the garbage, I cooked the food, I waited the tables, I made the coffee, I washed the dishes. That's what mom and pop business does. And the Four Marks is like that. I don't mean to go into all the details of what's involved with a newspaper, but I think you get the general idea. There's all of these different hats that I wear in order to do this paper. What I need from all of you are all of your friends to subscribe, all of you to subscribe. I need volunteers for anything you think you might be able to help me with. If you have news from your area that other people might be interested in, that you can email from your local newspaper that would actually be pertinent to the readers. Send it. Those things are important. They help. They'd be appreciated. When you do that, and you do email, write something simple in the subject field. Put submission. Put news. Put something, one word, capitalized, so that I know. I appreciate any kind of effort that anyone makes in this regard to contribute their thoughts, their feedback from their own experiences, and, you know, what they've seen that they enjoy. If they see an article that they like, you know, that's what I want to hear too. That's how the name was chosen. There were hundreds of names that were offered. We voted on names. It was narrowed down. We'd vote again. We'd go through them. We checked to make sure that the domains were available. I had writers in mind. I begged them to write for me. I got takers, the ones I wanted. The funding was short, but the first issue got out. There were more subscribers. The next issue got out. There were more subscribers and a lot of donations, and people advertised. Is anybody going to volunteer to come answer my phone? I could really use that one. It starts about 7 a.m. because people don't know about time zones. I don't know, you know. Geography, sisters. Geography. There is. There's a lot of different facets that are involved. It's growing. I hope I have your support. As I said, I get these phone calls, but I like to get them. I know I'm on track when I get them. People who call me tell me what they want to see, and I want to hear that. I want to know what people want to read. That doesn't mean that I'm going to get rid of all the canon law stuff. That doesn't mean I'm going to print only articles about breastfeeding. That doesn't mean... But I still want to hear. I've got a notebook in the back, and I've told a number of people, put your information down there. If you're interested in a subscription and you haven't already subscribed, just write, print very neatly your information. Please put your phone number and email so that if there's any question, I can, you know, give you a quick call and make sure I've got your address correct. Or if there's any other reason that I need to get a hold of you, then I can. I don't typically use the phone number except for those purposes. The list is not sold, not given out for any other purpose. But it would be a help. I'm watching the clock watcher. Am I all right? Okay. We need a Catholic press to confront the mainstream media with all its deception. Are you inclined to listen to ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox News, et al.'s gospel? In an editorial I wrote several years ago in the Northern Light, I highlighted how powerful the media is and illustrated the abuse of the media using a hoax that is well known. It was carefully executed. The hoax was carefully executed and went unpunished. Imagine that. Now we've seen more of them. The example also illustrates the potential for media moguls to reach the world to say whatever they want. If you'll bear with me. I think you should hear it. This was written in August of 2001. Media terrorists, they call the shots. False wonders can be made for television and movies, and who can tell the difference? Take Charlton Heston opening a path through the Red Sea, and that was years ago. In 1938, the media was flexing their credibility muscle when Orson Welles' shrewd radio production told 4 million listeners of a terrifying invasion. The response? Utter panic. It showed their misplaced trust in media honesty. Listeners acted on what they heard. Even in 1938, the media was a powerful weapon. With advances in technology, it's used today as it was then to support an agenda, but with greater ease. On one side is the mainstream media, but without the same wealth and level of communications, the other side is almost unknown. When a 15-year-old boy opened fire on his classmates in Santee, California, killing 2 and injuring 13 others, at the Santana High School, that was news. After all, he used a gun. It was front page news and the lead item on the television news. But about a month earlier, when a 19-year-old plowed his car, traveling at 60 miles an hour, into a crowd of college students in Isla Vista, thank you. Isla Vista? Yeah, that sounds right. Killing 4 and critically injuring 1, the news was barely reported. Why? The publicized case prompted news demands to outlaw guns. The other case could not be applied to their agenda. Consider the power of the networks when they call Florida for Al Gore, even though the polls were still open in most of the country, even though their exit survey showed Bush in the lead in Florida, even though the newspaper's long efforts after the vote finally showed Bush won Florida. How did it become more important for networks to predict who won an election than for election officials to count votes? That authority doesn't belong to the networks. No act of Congress empowered the media. No, they eased into that role, just like they eased into our living rooms, like a visitor whose language and behavior becomes increasingly vulgar the more he feels at home. Over and over, the media directs our perception, telling us what to accept. The media said Al Gore won Florida and Republicans threw in the towel. The media supports evolution and space flights to the moon, so the average person doesn't question. The media says you can't control the weather, and people believe that too. Was this court case concealed because Nikola Tesla is now credited with inventing the radio, not Marconi? And this technology is the basis for weather control through HARP? Evidence to the contrary doesn't seem to matter. Indeed, faced with overwhelming documentation, video, photographs, and supporting testimony, if the media doesn't acknowledge it, then for many, it's just stupid and simply not true. It was this control that allowed the media to aid in sheltering Clinton from losing office after he was impeached. A man who understood this necessity was described in Outside magazine. He hunted for quality mastodons in Siberia. Having found one, later used on a PBS special, he attached the tusks to a huge ice block that encased the body, all for the sake of the cameras. The block with attached tusks were dramatically taken away over the white landscape. Good stuff, Maynard. Only his team knew, well, until one of them was interviewed by Outside magazine. It's been reported, but not confirmed, that some 600 people in Italy wanted to ride in a spaceship badly enough to pay $10,000 apiece for the first tourist flight to Mars. According to Italian police, the would-be space travelers were told to spend their next vacation on Mars amid the splendors of ruined temples and painted deserts. According to the report, trips to the moon were also available. It was said that authorities thought the con men made off with over $6 million. Despite their smiling faces who wouldn't harm a fly, the media is quite against the unborn and their pro-life friends. In his column on the arrest of James C. Kopp, on charges of the 1998 murder of Buffalo, New York abortionist Barnett Slepian, Cal Thomas exposed media bias. Thomas said the New York Times covered the arrest at the top of its front page, quote, an indication of the importance editors attached to the story. Inside was a defending abortion rights editorial, and should there be any doubt where the Times stands on this issue, how could there be? The paper published an op-ed piece by the director of the Boulder, Colorado abortion clinic, who said he received the news of Kopp's arrest just as I was finishing performing an abortion for the last patient of the morning. End quote. Somehow they pull off a pretense of balance. Big name pro-life champions are rarely quoted, and then only the most awkward statements or unflattering photos are used. Certainly, they don't have any pictures of abortions, but every other imaginable form of nudity or violence is acceptable news. On a large scale, facts don't count. Facts are often denied because the truth is unexpected, painful, or a person may refuse to believe because he can't do anything about it. Your mother is dead. Your husband cheated on you. Your 5-year-old son has cancer. And yet when people do believe, it may be painful, like the Republicans who believed Gore won Florida. No, people believe based on the media's ability to deceive, which they have honed since 1938, knowing the power that they have. In the case of Orson Welles' CBS production, War of the Worlds, the adaptation, kept just enough to retain the name. The century was changed. The continent was changed. The country was changed, and with it the names and places of streets, towns, were changed to those of the broadcast area. The script was changed to have radio programming interrupted by news bulletins, warnings, and updates. 4 million were prey to those radio terrorists broadcasting from New York City. According to Professor David L. Miller in his new book, quote, the next day, newspapers across the country carried stories of terrorized people hiding in basements, panic flight from New Jersey and New York, stampedes in theaters, heart attacks, miscarriages, and even suicides. End quote. The professor himself implies that these stories were exaggerated claims by the print media intended to hurt radio broadcasters, their competition. It happened on October 30, 1938, when millions of Americans turned on their radios. What they heard that night was said to be an adaptation of the science fiction novel, The War of the Worlds, about a Martian invasion of the Earth, but under the direction of Orson Welles, an illusion was so cunningly created and performed that it sounded like real news bulletins interrupting a regular program telling listeners about an explosion, a meteor, troops being called out, and so forth. If channel surfers missed the brief explanation at the beginning, the next one wasn't for 40 minutes. Music was interrupted a number of times by bulletins reporting that a, quote, huge flaming object had dropped near Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Actors portrayed announcers, officials, news reporters, and others describing the landing of an invasion force. Perhaps one of the most convincing aspects of the clever broadcast scheme was the very unusual use of silence. After sirens, angry voices, static, microphone feedback, a rather awkward interview with an inarticulate Mr. Wilmoth, that gave listeners a sense of chaos and peril more than a detailed description of the meteor. For what seemed like a very long time, a studio piano played Clair de Lune, filling in an empty airspace. Finally, an anonymous studio announcer broke in with, quote, we are bringing you an eyewitness account. Then more empty space. The reporter returned, apparently unsure of whether he was on the air, and then continued his description. The tempo of his reporting increased until he was almost incoherent. In the background, the sound of terrified voices, screams, and noises creating a chaotic and frightening din. Then, abruptly, there was dead silence. After an unbearably long period of empty airspace, the studio announcer broke in with, ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, evidently there is some difficulty in our field transmission, end quote. Frank Riddick's role as an on-the-scene news reporter was inspired by the eyewitness description of the explosion of the Zeppelin Hindenburg, which had occurred the year before in New Jersey. In this world-famous broadcast, the reporter was describing the uneventful landing of the Hindenburg when it suddenly exploded with spectacular and deadly force. The reporter struggled to remain coherent, and millions heard his tearful, second-by-second description. The day the War of the Worlds was broadcast, Riddick spent hours listening to the Hindenburg recording. Because of the vast numbers of people affected, we know that in every way this hoax appeared genuine. And with sinister delight, the cast and producers walked away without penalty. Their deception was so perfect that thousands were convinced. And as we know from a New York Times article, these fragments from that article, here are some fragments from that article that illustrate the magnitude and irresponsible nature of the hoax. The broadcast, which disrupted households, interrupted religious services, created traffic jams, and clogged communication systems. Another quote. At least a score of adults required medical attention. Another quote. In Newark, more than 20 families believed, and some began moving household furniture. Thousands of persons called the police, newspapers and radio stations here and in other cities of the United States and Canada. In a New York theater, a manager reported that a throng of playgoers had rushed from his theater. In Harlem, 30 men and women rushed into the West 123rd Street police station, saying that they had their household goods packed and they were ready to leave. In Queens, hundreds of persons evacuated their homes, fearing that the city was being bombed. Louis Winkler of the Bronx was quoted, "I didn't tune it in until the program was half over, but when I heard the names and titles of the federal, state, and municipal officials, and when the Secretary of the Interior was introduced, I was convinced and ran into the street with scores of others and found people running in all directions." I've got pages of these. 100 calls received at Maplewood Police Headquarters. New Jersey Bell Telephone flooded with calls for more than an hour. New Orleans, a general impression prevailed that New Jersey had been devastated by the invaders. Fayetteville, North Carolina, people went to the newspaper office in tears seeking information. Providence, Rhode Island, phones of the Providence Journal were swamped. Other newspapers, same thing. Kansas City Bureau of the Associated Press received inquiries on the meteors from Los Angeles, Salt Lake City, Beaumont, Texas, so on. In Birmingham, Alabama, people gathered in groups and prayed, according to the New York Times. There weren't too many of those quotes. A man in Pittsburgh said he returned home in the midst of the broadcast and found his wife in the bathroom, a bottle of poison in her hand, screaming, "I'd rather die this way than that." These professionals were convinced too. Dr. Arthur F. Buddington, chairman of the Department of Geology, and Dr. Harry Hess, professor of geology, received the first alarming reports that a meteor had fallen near Dutch Neck, some 5 miles away. They armed themselves with the necessary equipment and set out to find a specimen. The plot thickens. The same New York Times article reported this strange coincidence. Quote, "A flickering of electric lights provided a buildup for the terror that was to ensue when the radio broadcast started. Without going out entirely, the lights dimmed and brightened alternately, and radio reception was also affected. The public service gas and electric company was mystified by the behavior of the lights, declaring that there was nothing wrong. A spokesman for the service department said a call was made to Newark, and the same situation was reported. He believed, he said, that the condition was general throughout the state. But after creating this nationwide horror, what penalty was paid? Quote, Orson Welles expressed his regrets, end quote. CBS also expressed regrets and said they would never use the technique of a simulated news broadcast again. Today, some may scoff at those who were so gullible, sure that they would not have been fooled. But that's naive. Others think that it was unintentional. And again, criticize the victims. Quote, rather, Professor David L. Miller writes, Orson Welles and his Mercury Theater staff of excellent writers and actors not so innocently conspired to scare the hell out of people for Halloween. Or was it to loose hell upon them like pyromaniacs with mounting titillation watching the world around them burn? That's what we're fighting. The counterfeit church is the same. It's worse. It's worse than what happened then. That's what we're fighting. That's why we need the Catholic press. It's why we need God's help. That's why we need your prayers to make it succeed. And I hope that this has helped the community that I intend to build through the four marks, together with Jesus, through the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Please pray for me. Pray for my apostolate. Thank you very much.